Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
My next guest is the award-winning author of Poor, which remains actually on the bestseller list. A year and a half now it's been on the bestseller list in Ireland. And it's her own story of being raised in poverty, eventually going on to study psychology in Trinity and then becoming, as she is now, a psychology lecturer in Maynooth University. Dr. Catriona O'Sullivan, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Catriona, we're going to talk about childhood trauma today. And I suppose Poor is in many ways a memoir about childhood trauma and maybe about your journey in overcoming it.
Yeah.
But you're also an academic expert in the area now. So, like we were just saying there, trauma is a very buzzword and concept these days and everything. Could we start by defining what trauma actually is and maybe what trauma isn't as well?
Yeah. So I think what we need to think about is there's stress and then there's trauma. So stress is really difficult and there's no denying it's impactful. But trauma is something that is relived by the body and the brain. And it's something that we cannot effectively integrate into our existing system. So stress is something, say we go through a divorce or a family divorce, that's really difficult and can be really stressful and really emotional and really painful. But eventually what happens with divorce, let's say, for example, we integrate that into our cognitive functioning and it becomes part of who we are.
Okay.
But with trauma...
So we process it.
We process
words,
it. Like, yeah. With trauma, it's usually a toxic, really stressful event that actually we find very difficult to integrate into our system. So it exists outside of our system, outside of our cognitions. So it's something that we relive regularly and we don't process fully and it doesn't become integrated. So that's the distinction between the two.
And am I right in thinking when a person is reliving their trauma, it is happening to them there right again? They're in that now again. It's not a memory like.
Yes. So sometimes actually they might not even know that the memory is there. So they might not be reliving the memory as in seeing it, but they're experiencing the physiological response to that event. They can be triggered in the world today by something less stressful and have exactly the same response that they would have had to the trauma. So it's something that exists effectively, so we don't integrate it.
Yeah.
And that's the distinction, Brendan. It's like we can all go through painful things and have really difficult times. It's not to diminish them. But if you are capable eventually of integrating that into your system, it's not trauma.
Okay. So what are the kind of, I think we call them adverse childhood experiences,
yes,
don't we? What are the kind of adverse childhood experiences that would cause trauma in a child as against just being upsetting for them?
So physical and sexual abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, severe neglect, parental mental health difficulties, and then we have or sudden death or loss, then obviously war, a car accident, murder, something really significant like that. There's also vicarious trauma that you can experience as a child. So if your mother or your father have been through trauma and they relive that continuously, you can actually be traumatised through that experience as well. So that can become a trauma for a person as well.
And is that what we call then intergenerational trauma? It gets passed on?
Kind of, that, yeah. So
okay.
Intergenerational trauma can be obviously relived. Well, so when we define trauma as in when we're in a psychological assessment, we would say if a person experienced their parent, say if someone's mother was raped, for example, or experienced abuse as a child, and they're continuously talking about that and reliving that,
okay,
the child just experiencing that from their parent is a trauma. Intergenerational trauma is where someone has had a parent who's experienced trauma, and then they're more likely to experience trauma themselves because of the conditions of their life that's set by their parents' trauma.
Okay.
So it's a bit different. It's not their parent traumatizing them. It's making them vulnerable to trauma.
Gotcha. And you would say that a trauma can start before the child is even born?
Well, so in the womb, we can have toxic stress in the womb, Brendan, that can actually affect the development of a child and make them susceptible to psychological disorders, to issues from birth, to early birth. So like there's these things when you're in the womb that affect your developments, and they're called teratogens. So if your parents smoke, but if there's stress, if they're living through war, all of these things are chemicals that are produced in a woman's body. They're either produced by the woman or actually added from the environment, and they can affect the child and their development.
Okay. So look, what I'm getting here as well is that the parents and the conditions of the home are central to this. So if a child has a good home life, right? And, you know, they're fairly secure in themselves and everything. A traumatic event happens. With the right support, is there a good chance that that child would be okay?
This is really important to understand. Trauma is not the event. It is the response to the event. So what we know from research, and all the experts in the world would tell you this, if a child does experience trauma, what they experience after that trauma will predict the response to the trauma.
Okay.
So if you're in a family, Brendan, and you experience something really significant as a child, you're in a car crash, there's a murder, you witness something, you experience some kind of physical or emotional abuse. If your family is good and they're responsive and you can get support, actually the reaction to that trauma is very little. So like you can actually survive and live a good life and it not really be affected that badly by that trauma. So like our environment and what we're brought up in and what we live in actually mitigates against the impact of trauma.
Okay.
That's why
kind of help and support in that situation will help that child process that trauma?
Well, obviously, psychological support. So, Brendan, when we talk about like the lack of services that are available in Ireland for kids, if kids experience physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, particularly when they're small, if there isn't a parent that can support them or a family member, and then the appropriate psychological supports, that impact will be lifelong or be very life limiting for that child.
Okay.
So basically we need psychological supports very early in the form of supportive family or understanding and are caring and loving and secure, but then also the right psychological interventions, psychotherapy, play therapy.
Okay.
But trauma
so what I'm hearing then is that basically a child who doesn't have that secure family life, a child who is living in poverty and will not get timely access to all that, there's a much bigger chance that their life is going to be defined by their trauma.
Yeah, and also when we talk about trauma, there's three actual types of trauma, Brendan. So there's acute trauma, which is a one-off event that occurs in somebody's life. Okay, and that has the least impact on a person in terms of the lifelong impact.
Okay.
That's not to diminish its impact. It might be a car crash, it might be a one-off experience. And then there's chronic trauma, where you're living in a... So what we're seeing now in Gaza, that is chronic trauma. That is day-to-day traumatic experience. And then there's complex trauma. And so complex trauma is where you're experiencing, say, neglect, abuse, toxic stress, but that is in your family or in your interpersonal relations. So what you've got is the complexity of your relationship. So maybe it's your mother. In my case, it was my mum and dad that were actually causing some of the trauma in my life.
So the people you're meant to trust.
Yes.
Okay.
So like the response to trauma, it is dependent on the type that you experience. And so the outcomes are... The outcomes are much worse for people with complex trauma, because not only do they have to resolve the actual traumatic experience, which in my case was the things that I experienced from people outside of my home, but also the complexity of having family members who inflicted trauma on me as well, which is very complex. So I didn't have like the basic connection to my family and the love and support and the attachment that allowed me to access supports and feel valuable. Whereas someone who has very... chronic trauma, that is really difficult to heal from as well. So PTSD, for example, you would see like people, war veterans, who would have this chronic trauma where their biology has been changed by the experience. Like how they experience and view the world is different than someone who's had maybe just an acute situation or someone who's never had trauma.
I understand what you're saying, yeah. So the complex trauma then, how did that affect you then as you grew up?
I think I like to use this as a small child, like stiff shoulder syndrome is what I call it. That's not a psychological term, by the way. That's been made up by me.
Mm.
But like I was always on. I was hypervigilant. But also, Brendan, I was hypervigilant and sensitive to cues in my environment of threat that weren't actually threatening. So, for example, if a teacher slightly raised a voice to the class, I would immediately have a trauma response to that, which would be like in my case. So some kids respond differently. In my case, I was an outward responder. So I would throw things, scream, be sent out. I would have probably met the diagnosis for ADHD, all the other things that kids are diagnosed with now, or you have a freezing response. Whereas a child may experience a normal environmental situation where a teacher is trying to manage a class and so she raises her voice. But because the child has this pre-wired interpretation of threat, whereby they're hypersensitive, hyper-aware, but they're also interpreting threat where it's not there. And they're not able to control that because their brain has been adapted. So what you've got is this situation where little kids are on all the time and they're interpreting the world as threatening when it isn't.
And they're either shutting down or they're reacting out.
Yeah.
So did you have to learn to trust everything then?
I still don't trust everything. So like, this is the reason why I wrote Poor Brendan, is because I still am hypervigilant. So like even today coming here, you know, like I have physiological responses to stress that somebody else wouldn't have. Like my body empties, for example. I shake, I get... So like, it doesn't leave you, but there's another mechanism that develops through therapy and through healing. So while I have... if you can imagine me, within me is that small little girl, 7-year-old Katrina, who thinks the world is not a safe place and is very afraid of everybody. And so sometimes when I am faced with a stressful situation, that little girl is completely, you know, like a deer in the headlights. What I have learned to do through a good long time of therapy is there's another part of me, like a bigger part of me now, that can actually say, it's okay, I got you. Like my book, the start of my book, I dedicate my book to 7-year-old me. And it's actually me saying to me, I got you. So it's not that...
But she's still in there.
She's still there. And sometimes it can be worse than others. So like people who have experienced complex trauma like me or chronic trauma, it's like a crack in the foundations or a reservoir, deep reservoir. So there's some situations, stressful situations, breakups of marriages, friendship difficulties that actually shake the foundations a little bit more than other people's. So I have to be especially careful when I'm in stressful situations. I have to be more mindful because I know... Oh, that there's this deeper issue in me. So it's not that I'm like not functioning well. And actually, Brendan, some of my hypervigilance has done me really well in life. Like I can read.
Yeah, yeah.
I was talking about like I lecture 300 students. Like I know when anyone in that room is on their phone.
Oh my God! Right, you're always scanning the perimeters.
Always on.
Like,
yeah, it's pretty tiring, but I'm always on. But the students kind of like it, so I'd be like that. Excuse me, back row, get your phone. This is not an Instagram moment.
Okay.
Like I know every student who's ever fallen asleep in my class. There's one guy called Kenny, and he messages me a lot, and I always say, Kenny, you're the first student ever to fall asleep in my class because I'm on for everything. So
exhausting too, though.
It's exhausting at times.
It just strikes me, are we diagnosing things in kids, maybe in teenagers and stuff, calling it oppositional, defiant disorder, borderline personality disorder, all these things, when it's actually trauma?
It's complex. That's a complex issue. And I did actually post about it this morning because like sometimes we're asking the wrong question. We're asking what's wrong with you rather than what happened to you or what happened to the child. So there is a movement in psychology towards more person understanding approach to symptoms than what we have. The problem what we have nowadays is that you need a diagnosis to access services. And so people really want to be diagnosed. And also, Brendan, adults want to be diagnosed now as well. Like we have a lot of women who are like searching for an ADHD diagnosis or because they're finding it really hard to cope and they want to have their symptoms pathologized. Trauma does underpin an awful lot of developmental disorders. It's well reported in the scientific literature. So I definitely think there is a case to be said. Like trauma affects you your biology.
Okay.
It adapts your brain. So there's three parts of the brain that are actually changed. And then parts of the brain are actually implicated in all developmental disorders.
Okay. So they could have those disorders.
So they share.
But they're a symptom possibly of trauma.
And trauma could underpin them. But also attachment issues as well. So the relationship with your parents also are implicated in developmental disorders as well. So if you have like a toxic relationships, your parents are addicts, there is a lack of connection with your parents, they're unable to nurture you in the right way, they also relate to diagnosis of ADD, ADHD as well. So, I mean, all of these things, we're looking for really simple answers to complex things.
Okay, yeah. So, so we see how the child might behave, which is the freezing or the lashing out. Adults who have unresolved trauma, you've explained your own situation, which is probably quite extreme or not unique, but it's a particular kind. How might it manifest with adults in general who have trauma?
Again, you see both things. So oftentimes if someone's been, especially through chronic trauma rather than complex, you'll see flattened affects. That's what we call it in psychology. But like, you know, emotionless. Some people are very withdrawn and distant. So you would see people who are very scared to get involved in relationships. They're very distant, and their facial expressions are even affected by the trauma, Brendan. Like, there's a flattened approach. Okay. You don't see emotions in the face of people who've had significant trauma. But also, so it's in adults as well. Like, in psychology, the worst thing about studying psychology, and one of the best things, is you hear these statistics. If you're a child who's experienced, you're more likely to have a teenage pregnancy. You're more likely to be divorced. You're more likely not to be able to hold down a job. You're more likely to be addicted to drugs. So, like, addiction, marriage breakdowns, dysfunction in relationships, inability to care for themselves correctly, overeating, all of these things have been related to childhood trauma.
Okay. So how might an adult listening now, who's suddenly going, hang on a minute, this is ringing bells with me. Yeah. How might they know if that getting some help for trauma, which we'll talk in a minute about how you might help people with it, how would they know if that might be the answer to their issue?
If I was to talk to someone, I talk a lot about trauma now. We had a big conference recently on it. And one of the things I'd say is if you're suspicious a lot of the world and you don't trust a lot, and you find it really hard to stay in relationships, or you find yourself reacting and then afterwards going, what happened there, an awful lot, because that would have been some of the things that I would have done. Like, particularly in friendships, I found it really, really difficult to trust friends and to believe people, and also find myself angrily reacting to really small things. If they're like common in your life, I would say, you know, maybe it's time to reflect on yourself. Like, healing is possible. Most of us actually know somewhere deep down if there is an underlying trauma that we haven't dealt with. Some people
really.
Oh yeah. But the other thing that you might
have a lot of people blotted them out?
I don't think they blot them out. I think they develop mechanisms to cope. So we talk, so like, I would think about some of my family members, for example. Like, some people are really rigid. Yeah. Are really rigid and inflexible in everything.
Okay.
And like, so even if you say they have to be right and they have to be living a good life, and nobody can affect that perception that they have of themselves. They're really controlled. Okay. And that's a protection and a mechanism which has helped that person. It's really important to them. It might make it really difficult for you to be in a relationship with that person, but I mean, that's
so they're
a defense.
Kind of white knuckling.
They're
the trauma,
white knuckling
basically.
It, and they're holding on to this idea of themselves. They're protecting. I always say,
because like if they let go,
that's it. Yes. Yeah. And I did have a conversation with this particular family member one day, like trying to push him.
Okay, let's be careful here.
Oh, yeah,
now.
He's fine. Yeah, like, they're fine. Okay. Yeah. But I had a talk with him, and I remember him saying, like, he said, if I speak about this, I think I'll drive my car into a wall. And I was like, okay, this is, you know what, this is absolutely fine. I love you the way you are. Because we can't force people to process things that they're not ready to.
So the answer might not be for everyone. You know, we think now talk about everything. Some people,
you know, if they're living the best life that they can and they're doing the very best they can, you know, for me, I want everybody to experience the freedom I've experienced. Like, the gift of healing is connection. So, like, trauma robs you of connection, Brendan.
Okay.
And it robs you of the ability to love and be loved fully. And for me, having been in therapy for a long time, and I've engaged in lots of trauma-focused therapy, I can actually love and feel connection fully and trust with a human being. And so I want that for everybody, because I think it's our right, like, to live a joyous, trusting, healthy, connected life. But I also respect the fact that some people just are not ready. And it's quite difficult for men, particularly, like, to be honest, like, we see it now with the cases that are coming out around the childhood sexual abuse that's coming out. Men have lived for years and years with that situation being held together really tight. They're not taught even to talk about the emotional stuff. Mm. And they're not taught to speak about that kind of thing, particularly that they were vulnerable and bad things happened to them. And so for them, I would say, you know, if you're getting by and you're doing the best you can, like, you know, do what you can.
Okay. So in terms of treatment then, you've talked a lot about therapy and trauma-specific therapy. Are there particular treatments for, say someone who is an adult has discovered that there was childhood trauma there. Is there anything in particular that works well?
Yeah, so there's things that don't work well as well. So like I'm always mindful, right, of people going on Instagram and following quackery. Just got to be honest, like if someone's telling you to go up to the mountains and lick a frog and get high and then you'll be fixed, that's not going to fix you. And if you're a frog licking person who's going to come at me, fair enough. Like okay. Trauma, especially.
So the ayahuasca route might not be the best way to uncover your trauma.
I actually don't. I'm not like, so there's lots of actual research now. So there's a load of movements towards psychedelics.
Yeah.
But in a very controlled environment that's very therapeutic focused. Like, it depends on the type of trauma, firstly. So if it's a one-off trauma, you may be really, really healed through something like EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization, basically. It's a very scientifically proven approach to acute trauma.
Have you done it?
I've done it.
How does it work?
It sounds weird.
Okay.
So you have a therapist, Brendan, and he says, tell him what you're thinking about. And you tell him what you're thinking about. And then you kind of stop till the last thought. And it might be a kind of sensitive thought. So for me, I might have said, I'm thinking about, you know, a situation that happened when I was a child with my mum. And it's quite painful. And he'll say, stop there. And then he gets you to think about the thought, but you're moving your eyes to a beam at the same time as you're thinking about the thought. It's actually like desensitizing the strength of the connection to the actual traumatic events. And it's really powerful.
Really?
Brendan, wow. In some circumstances for me, one particular circumstance, it actually fixed it. I did 8 sessions and the reaction that I had, the response to this particular event was gone. I was surprised. I was like, wow, this works. However, I tried to do it then around my mom and it was actually so overwhelming because that was a very complex situation. So like EMDR has been very good for very acute situations or very clear situations of trauma memories and trauma responses. Complex trauma requires long-term therapeutic relationship building. Like I was at a conference with Gabriel Mate, I presented with him, Basil van der Kolk. These are world-class experts. There was a lot of talk about psychedelics being the new elixir.
Van der Kolk also, because we all obviously became experts in trauma. Everyone read The Body Keeps the Score in the last few years. He talks about yoga and Tai Chi and stuff as well.
Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed actually when I went to the conference a little bit with van der Kolk. I was like, had him on this pedestal. Yeah. I read the book. The book changed my life. It was the first time I ever read a book and thought, I understand myself now.
Okay.
And so The Body Keeps the Score is a fantastic Bible for people who want to understand trauma. However, there's trends in psychotherapy movements. And so I found him a little bit diminishing of psychotherapy, to be honest. And for me, I don't just have trauma. I have the complexity of the attachment issues with my family, the fact that my trauma happened within my family. So for me, I needed psychotherapy for a long period so I could form a relationship that allowed me then to actually resolve some of the trauma. So I think psychotherapy is actually the elixir. It's the thing that's good and long term for complex trauma.
Okay.
However, you know, I also needed to go on an antidepressant, and this is well stated at the start because I was so anxious and so down that I actually couldn't engage in mental health supports. And that happens an awful lot. The research shows that can be quite beneficial for the first couple of months if you're going to deal with the trauma that you're experiencing.
Okay. So the first stop for anyone is their GP.
Yes.
They will get
Go onto Instagram looking for a diagnosis. You're not going to, even with
okay,
me, you're not okay, going to get it
okay.
there.
And you're not going to find it at the yoga studio
and,
either, no?
Yeah. Brendan, I actually was advised by somebody to go and do a mindfulness course before I'd done any therapy. And I was 4 weeks into the mindfulness course and I actually nearly had a breakdown because some traumatized people can't be in their bodies.
Yeah,
they can't be in their bodies. And then after I'd kind of healed a little bit, I went to read the literature on it. And it's actually quite harmful for people to just dive straight into a mindfulness and a meditation or a yoga course. If you're going to do yoga and you're traumatized, go to a trauma-informed yoga therapist.
Okay. But fundamentally, I think go to a proper doctor.
Yes.
Is your first protocol. So listen, finally then, so a traumatized child grows up and maybe deals with it or doesn't, becomes a parent. And I presume then that there is a huge desire to break the cycle and all that kind of thing, and you want to be a better parent than your own parent was and all that. Is that very, very complicated?
It is. So like just in my own story, Brendan, every person who has a child wants the best for their child. Like every mother wants to give their child a good life, especially a life that's better than their own. In my own case, that was my experience. And then the trauma that you experience and how it affects your psychology actually affects your capability to actually parent well. In my own case, you know, I used drugs and drink initially to try and, I suppose, numb down my reaction to the trauma that I'd experienced. And so that affected my ability to be a good parent. I think in my own case with my own son, and this might be quite common with people who've healed a little bit, I was way overprotective with my child.
Okay,
like
yeah.
John will tell you, like, I never let him go out to drink, but I never let him, you know, I always had to know where he was. I was very suspicious of like coaches and swimming classes and things like that, because, you know, kids are vulnerable. Like, I just need to say this, Brendan, like, there are certain kids that are more vulnerable to trauma than others. So, like, if you are living in poverty, you're 10 times more likely to experience, like, childhood sexual abuse than other children.
Okay.
So there are actual, like, environments where trauma is much more likely for children.
So this is a class issue, is it?
It is. Well, CSA is. It is a class issue. But, I'm of the belief that poverty itself is a trauma in of itself. Like, the emotional and the emotional abuse that goes with living long term in a traumatic and a poor environment. Imagine living now 2 years in a hostel as a 7-year-old child, not knowing where your bed is going to be, not knowing how much food, your mum's stressed all the time. That's a trauma, Brendan. Like, so poverty, yeah, is definitely an indicator of whether you will be traumatised, but also in my view, it's a trauma in of itself.
Okay, Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan, you know, we hear a lot of pub talk and casual talk about trauma. That was absolutely fascinating. I envy your students, like, because you're not giving any simple answers to anything and you're explaining the layers of it all and everything, but fascinating.
Thank you
so much. Great to talk to you again, Dr. Katrina O'Sullivan. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.